It's your volunteer reader and Flagstaff, Chuck Kaufman, bringing you this week's edition of Northland Views, news from the WilliamsNews.com website. Today is Thursday, the 24th of April, 2025, and today we have these headlines. Williams Flagstaff Councils approve transfer of vouchers. Business Beat, the Vikings Vault brings vintage charm to Williams. And trucks with uranium cross Navajo Nation, reviving long-standing fears. Starting with our first article by Calvin Shoemaker from the 23rd of April, Williams Flagstaff Councils approve transfer of vouchers. Last month, the city councils of Williams and Flagstaff each passed resolutions approving a voluntary transfer of the Williams Housing Choice Voucher Program to the City of Flagstaff Housing Authority. According to Williams Mayor Don Dent, 17 of the city's roughly 50 available vouchers are in use by Williams residents. The U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development provides administrative funding based on how many vouchers are being used. With so few vouchers in use and no staff member in Williams to administer the program, Flagstaff is set to absorb the Williams voucher program effective July the 1st, pending HUD approval. The move will see Flagstaff service area for housing vouchers expand to include Williams at no detriment to current Williams voucher holders. A symptom of the short-term rental situation is how Dent referred to the small number of vouchers being used in Williams. At one time, all available vouchers were used, but less properties are now available for voucher holders as the city's housing market has gotten increasingly saturated with short-term rentals, while previously long-term rental properties have been converted by homeowners and investors looking to capitalize on local tourism. The city loses almost one landlord a month to the short-term rental craze, according to Dent, who says roughly 4 out of every 5 short-term rentals in the city are owned by an investment buyer or out-of-towner. Dent said short-term rentals are the biggest problem impacting housing in Williams, with 250 currently in operation today, representing 15% of the city's 1,653 total housing units, according to estimates from Williams City staff. Until we can ever control that number and put a limit on that number somehow, that situation just continues to grow, Dent said. Even 20 years ago, most of those homes were either owner-occupied by a family who lived here and worked here, or by somebody that rented them out as workforce housing to families. Dent is among the municipal leaders in Arizona's tourism magnates who are looking to the state legislature to take action to help alleviate repercussions related to the short-term market swallowing up available housing from locals, though he's not optimistic the state government will act. If we could get to where it was only 10% of our housing stock, we could live with that, Dent said. That would free up 75 or 100 homes. Overall, Dent feels like the housing situation in Williams is not going to get better until the short-term rental bug is dealt with. Considering factors like the city's ongoing building moratorium due to an at-capacity wastewater treatment system and the rental trend driving up home values and pricing out local workers, the fear is that the city could lose a substantial portion of its workforce and, in effect, a piece of its identity. It makes a community where it's really not a community anymore, Dent said. You're a place that's an overnight stop for a bunch of people, but all of your institutions, like your schools and healthcare, struggle from it. The Flagstaff Housing Authority's voucher program is at capacity with more than 500 issued and a wait list of 2,675 applicants who face a wait time of roughly 18 to 24 months, according to Caleb Alexander, Assistant Director of the City Housing Authority. Flagstaff has no plans to staff the Williams Housing Authority office on Sheridan Avenue, although it may utilize the building, which is currently closed on an as-needed temporary basis, Alexander said. That's Williams Flagstaff Council's approved transfer of vouchers. Our next article, Business Beat, The Vikings Vault Brings Vintage Charm to Williams. This is by Calvin Shoemaker from the 22nd of April. If you've ever seen the show American Pickers on History Channel, or you just have a general appreciation for vintage and reusable items, you've got to check out the newest resale boutique thrift store in Williams. Run by husband and wife duo Chris and Tiffany Marshall of Williams, the Vikings Vault has a little something for everyone, from clothing and household items to outdoor gear and old records. We have a little bit of everything, Tiffany said. That's how we want to keep it, so everyone can find treasures. Located at 221 West Railroad Avenue in the historic Red Cross Garage across the street from the Williams Visitors Center, the Vikings Vault is already attracting interest from locals and tourists, even though it's only been open since April the 10th. I was very overwhelmed and grateful, Tiffany said, of the community response since their opening. We're very humbled, and it's just overwhelming the good response we've received, so we are gracious for that. It's been amazing already, and it's only been a few days, Chris added. We are stunned. The affirmation has been fantastic. Created about two decades ago as a way to make some extra cash, the Vikings Vault, named in honor of Chris's Norwegian heritage, originally began as Tiffany's eBay store. Now, the mom-and-pop shop is bringing the couple's love of buying, selling, and collecting unique items to the Williams community. My parents are collectors, so we grew up going to swap meets and garage sales, Tiffany said, and it's been in my blood since I was born. The items in the store's shelves might look like a random hodgepodge of things to some, but to the Marshalls, they're items that have been meticulously selected and curated over time. Tiffany describes her taste as eclectic and says her forte is the mid-century modern design style. I care about what is coming in here, Tiffany said. We care about what's going to somebody's house. The only brand new items the store sells are earrings. Everything else has been intentionally acquired over time and is what Chris and Tiffany like to call gently loved. Part of their efforts in the store's endeavors include ensuring that all items are functioning before they go out onto the floor, even if it means buying parts to do repairs. Although the shop isn't exactly the couple's main gig yet, Chris works for W.L. Gore and Tiffany works at the local hardware store, the Vikings Vault is a genuine labor of love for the couple that has been married nearly 30 years. The Vikings Vault is open from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. Thursday through Sunday. And that's Business Beat, The Vikings Vault Brings Vintage Charm to Williams. Our next article is by Emma McKissick of Cronkite News from the 22nd of April. Trucks with uranium cross Navajo Nation, reviving long-standing fears. Although the Navajo Nation has reached an agreement with Energy Fuels Incorporated on uranium transportation through tribal land, many tribal members remain concerned it won't protect them from the harms of uranium contamination. Tribal leaders say they had little choice but to enter the agreement, as federal law preempts any tribal regulations that conflict with it regarding the transportation of radioactive materials. In between the four sacred mountains of the Navajo Nation, two large white trucks made a passage through the land coming from the Pinyon Plain Mine in Arizona's Kaibab National Forest, which sits just outside the western boundary of the Navajo Nation, to the White Mesa Mill in southern Utah. The vehicles traveled more than 260 miles along Highways 89, 160, and 191, carrying a chemical all too familiar to the Navajo people and one that haunted them for years, uranium. On July 30, 2024, Energy Fuels Incorporated, a publicly traded company specialized in uranium mining and milling, among other things, sent the trucks with a very, very short notification time before the transport, said Stephen Etcity, executive director of the Navajo Nation Environmental Protection Agency, during a Navajo Nation Council meeting 6 months later. This led to months of negotiations and the eventual development of a transportation agreement between Energy Fuels and the Navajo Nation to set safety requirements and ensure accountability. Title 49 in the Code of Federal Regulations outlines transportation requirements and classifies uranium ore as a low specific activity material, which is the lowest level of radioactive material hauled on roads and highways, said Chris Beecher, acting Deputy Attorney General for the Navajo Department of Justice, at the meeting. This means that moving uranium from one place to another is exempt from rigorous transportation requirements. Indigenous communities in the Southwest have taken steps to prohibit uranium mining and transportation on their lands due to the history of contamination, illness, and death. In 2005, the Navajo Nation enacted the Diné National Resources Protection Act, which bans uranium mining and processing within its territory. In 2012, the nation passed the Radioactive and Related Substances, Equipment, Vehicles, Persons, and Materials Transportation Act, which prohibits the transportation of uranium on tribal lands. However, federal law, specifically the Atomic Energy Act and the Hazardous Materials Transportation Act, regulates hauling of radioactive materials and override state and tribal regulations that go against them, also known as federal preemption. The Navajo Nation has done the next best thing by entering into an agreement with Energy Fuels, Beecher said. According to the agreement, at no cost to the Navajo Nation, the corporation has agreed to clean up 10,000 tons of uranium-bearing materials from abandoned mines scattered throughout Navajo land. The company will also pay 50 cents per pound of processed uranium produced at the White Mesa Mill, which will amount to approximately $40,000 to $50,000 a month, depending on the richness of the uranium ore, with that rate to be adjusted annually for inflation, Beecher said during the meeting. There will be approximately 10 trucks per day, and the transport can take 2 to 4 years, depending on the amount of ore obtained from the Pinyon Plain Mine, Beecher said. Energy Fuels also agreed to pay $1.2 million into the Navajo Nation CERCLA. That funds uranium transport program, and any remaining funds may be used more generally to support education, the environment, public health and welfare, transportation safety, and local economic development, Beecher said. The company has plans to also mine uranium ore at the Roca Honda mine near Mount Taylor in New Mexico. If mining begins at Roca Honda, the existing agreement will apply to the transportation of uranium ore from that mine through Navajo land. The Navajo Department of Justice and Environmental Protection Agency limited trucks to specific routes and hours of the day, prohibiting hauling during holidays and public events in respect of the culture and traditions of the nation. Energy Fuels promised to give a 14-day warning in advance of its monthly schedule before entering Navajo land. The Navajo Nation has suffered long-standing impacts from uranium mining conducted during the Cold War era, said Mark Chalmers, President and CEO of Energy Fuels, in a press release earlier this year. This has, understandably, caused mistrust toward the U.S. government and energy companies. Not all Navajo Nation officials were in favor of the terms of agreement, questioning their execution. "We will be continued to be lied to. We won't get the full packet," said Vince James, a Navajo Nation Council delegate, during the council meeting. Other tribal members echoed that sentiment. Robin Jackson, executive director of Dine CARE, a nonprofit organization advocating for environmental protection, voiced her concerns over Energy Fuels' fulfillment of the agreement requirements, such as a dust cover as a preventative measure to ensure the radioactive debris does not escape the truck during transport. "These trucks are only covered by a tarp, and material particles could get out," Jackson said. "Since this is primarily going through Navajo Nation, that's Navajo communities that are being exposed to the uranium ore and radiation." Jackson said each vehicle is required to have a symbol indicating that it contains radioactive material, but the symbol is too small for community members to see. "Today, 85% of all Navajo people live in uranium-contaminated homes, according to an investigation from the Pulitzer Center. The effects of uranium vary from shortness of breath and the irritation to the skin after exposure to cancer and aggressive forms of autoimmune disease. The stakes are higher for those on the Navajo land due to zinc deficiency," said Johnny Lewis, director and founder of the Community Environmental Health Program, which is dedicated to studying the environmental effects of uranium and mine waste exposure on tribal land. "What we see, especially on Navajo, is that you have some basic fundamental deficits in nutrition, and those also contribute to the toxicity of the metals," said Lewis. "For almost 40 years, Navajo men, women, and children worked in uranium mines where radioactive contamination spread to livestock and farmland. Children often played in open-pit mines, unaware of the health risks posed by radioactive waste. Leona Morgan did not grow up in a contaminated environment, but her family has seen the effects of uranium. She co-founded Hall No, a nonprofit organization that informs community about nuclear mining and milling. People are scared. There are health problems, and the reservation doesn't have a cancer center," Morgan said. "When people have kidney problems, they have to go to dialysis. They oftentimes drive 4 hours from the res to somewhere and pick up people along the way. It's an all-day thing." In the past, people affected by uranium could receive financial relief outlined in the Radiation Exposure Compensation Act. The law failed to pass reauthorization and is no longer providing any compensation. Energy Fuels has not disclosed specific revenue figures solely from its Pinyon Plain mine operations. However, in 2024, the company reported total uranium sales of 450,000 pounds, generating a gross profit of $21.32 million with a 56% gross margin, which means the company kept 56 cents per dollar as gross profit after covering the direct costs of production such as mining, milling, and transportation. The average realized prices were $75.13 a pound when selling uranium under long-term agreements with buyers, and $91.51 per pound while selling uranium on the open market without long-term arrangements. President Donald Trump issued the immediate measures to increase American Mineral Production Executive Order on March the 10th, which encourages public and private partnerships and capital investment in domestic mineral production. We're trying to fend off these renewing mining activities, but it is coming, and we just have to continue to fight, Etcity with the Navajo EPA said. That's Trucks with Uranium Cross Navajo Nation, reviving long-standing fears. You're listening to Northland Views here on Sun Sounds of Arizona with your volunteer reader, Chuck Kaufman, reminding you that you can listen to Northland Views and other Sun Sounds of Arizona programming as it streams or at a time of your choosing by going to the Sun Sounds of Arizona website at sunsounds.org or by downloading the Sun Sounds of Arizona app for your iPad or iPhone from the Apple App Store or for your Android phone or tablet from the Google Play Store. And finally, you can listen to Sun Sounds of Arizona streaming on your Amazon Dot or Echo. Arizona Game and Fish provides the information for this next article, Williams Area Fishing Report, for April. This is from the 22nd. Here is the April fishing report from the Arizona Game and Fish Department with information on Williams Area and Kaibab National Forest lakes. Kaibab Lake. The campground is closed for the winter season, but the boat launch and day use areas are open. The limit is 2 bass, minimum size 13 inches, 4 channel catfish, and 4 trout. Only boats with a single 10-horsepower motor or less or single electric motor are allowed on Kaibab Lake. The lake is very low and launching a boat is doable but challenging. Rainbow trout were stocked last week. Cataract Lake. On April 11th, the Arizona Game and Fish Department, in partnership with the Kaibab National Forest, deployed approximately 25 juniper trees in the lake as fish habitat to benefit warm water species such as largemouth bass, bluegill, and black crappie. This was the last of the planned sport fish reservoir habitat projects for Region 2. We now have added habitat to Kaibab Lake, Dogtown Lake, Whitehorse Lake, and Kunikinik Lake. Green junipers such as these can last for over 100 years if they remain submerged. Only boats with 10-horsepower motor or less or single electric motor are allowed on Cataract Lake. The limit is 2 bass, minimum size 13 inches, 4 channel catfish, and 4 trout. Both the county and Forest Service day use areas are currently open. City Reservoir, Buckskinner Park. The lake is full. The limit is 2 bass, minimum size 13 inches, 4 channel catfish, 5 sunfish, and 4 trout. Rainbow trout were stocked this month. Dogtown Lake. The campground is closed for the winter season, but day use access and boat launch are open. Only boats with a single electric motor are allowed on Dogtown Lake. No gas-powered motors. The limit is 2 bass, minimum size 13 inches, and 4 trout. Spring fishing is starting to kick off, and anglers are catching trout and even a few bass. Rainbow trout were stocked last week. Santa Fe Reservoir. Only boats with a single electric motor are allowed on Santa Fe Reservoir. No gas-powered motors. The limit is 2 bass, minimum size 13 inches, 4 channel catfish, and 4 trout. Rainbow trout were stocked this month. JD Dam. JD Dam is catch and release only for trout. No trout may be kept. Artificial fly and lure only, and single-pointed barbless hooks only. Only boats with a single electric motor are allowed on JD Dam. No gas-powered motors. Anglers are starting to catch a few tiger trout. The tank remains low, and the water is murky, making fishing difficult. Whitehorse Lake. The campground and access to the boat launch are closed as of September 30, 2024. Access to the lake is walk-in only. Only boats with a single electric motor are allowed on Whitehorse Lake. No gas-powered motors. The limit is 2 bass, minimum size 13 inches, and 4 channel catfish. Folks willing to walk in have been catching largemouth bass. Russell Tank. The limit is 4 trout. Access to Russell Tank is open. The water level of Russell Tank has dropped from last spring and will not be stocked at this time due to lower water levels and water quality issues. Check the fishing regulations before heading out, as many of the lakes around Williams and Flagstaff have special regulations. Reminder, the use of live minnows and fish as bait are not allowed on any waters in Coconino County, including all of the bodies of water listed above. Your licenses pay for the fish you catch. Poachers are stealing from you. It is illegal to transport and release live fish in Arizona, including all of the waters listed below. The illegal introduction of unwanted species is costly and diminishes the quality of our fisheries. If you observe a violation, please report it to the Operation Game Thief Hotline at 1-800-352-0700. And that's Arizona Game and Fish Department, Williams Area Fishing Report for April. Our final item, Crane Tours, Restoration Forest Products, and Camp Navajo. This is from the 23rd of April. U.S. Representative Eli Crane recently toured the Restoration Forest Products facility in Belmont, the congressman shared in his April 19th newsletter. They operate the largest sawmill constructed in Arizona and help protect the health of our forests, Crane noted. On April 15th, he visited Camp Navajo. I'm very grateful for all the work being done there, he said. I appreciated learning more about their important history and priorities. Recently, Representative Crane joined the bipartisan Congressional Explosive Ordnance Disposal, EOD, caucus, and he looks forward to continuing to advocate on Camp Navajo's behalf in Washington. And that article was Crane Tours, Restoration Forest Products, and Camp Navajo. You've been listening to Northland Views here on Sun Sounds of Arizona with your volunteer reader, Chuck Kaufman. Remember, you can listen to Sun Sounds of Arizona programming at a time of your choosing or as it streams on sunsounds.org or on the Sun Sounds of Arizona app, available from the Apple App Store or the Google Play Store. And finally, you can listen to your Amazon Dot or Echo for the Sun Sounds of Arizona stream.